Welcome everybody back to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast. I am your host, Andrew. And as always, I got my co-host Matt here with me in ultimately not very surprising fashion. The New York Jets, after a big win with an opportunity to claw their way back into the fight, make some noise in the division, make things tougher for a division rival in the Miami Dolphins, who just themselves had lost a heartbreaker to the Tennessee Titans the week earlier. With all the momentum, with all the bad air in the building seemingly gone, and an opportunity to really right the ship, what do the Jets do? In classic Jets fashion, they get shut out 30-0. We don't know what else to say at this point, because Matt, and I want to get your opinion as well. In the back of my head, I always felt like this was a possibility. As we've seen from this team, especially under Robert Saleh, they struggle to string big wins together. They'll go on little mini win streak runs in the early middle part of the season. And after that, it is a challenge for this team to be consistently good from a week-to-week basis. And after a big win against Houston, to come out this next week when you maybe have some playoff chances or hopes or anything of the sort revitalized, and to just completely and totally lay an egg and get dominated from the first play, basically, by the Miami Dolphins is not what we would have hoped to see, not what anyone would have hoped to see. And I really think in an overall just, I don't know if indictment is the right word, but it's what I'm going to go with, an overall indictment on this season and, in my opinion, on this coaching staff and their inability to keep people together and keep them motivated and keep them focused on the goal at hand rather than getting too high after a win and then immediately letting everything fall out from under them. It was for a lot of other coaches, this would have been a career or at least a job ending game.
Yeah, I completely agree. But you know what? This coaching staff has kind of been coaching with the mindset of this year's a wash. Who cares? We have our job next year. We'll have Rodgers back and we'll do it all again. And everybody's going to forget, because if we start winning, everybody's going to be happy. And that nonchalant, really non-caring attitude just shows up in pretty much everything this team has done this year. You mentioned consistency. That's something that this team has lacked. Not just this year, for many years. It's whether they're inconsistent quarterback play, whether it's inconsistent play calling, inconsistent game management, inconsistent offensive line play, inconsistent health. Everything's just been inconsistent to the level of just being a sludge team. That's what they are. They're a team that's sludge. They can't move. They can't function. They are just stuck in sludge. And I don't see that really changing without something dramatic happening. Like, I don't think there's going to be some kind of switch flip where they're going to be able to just turn it on for next year. Like, oh, we're going to care again. We're going to, you know, really try this time. We'll actually game plan for games. We'll make adjustments to the team when needed. We'll hold people accountable. No, that's not going to happen. A lot of the horrible things that we wish would change this year are still going to be there. And that's kind of, you know, a downer. But it is what it is. At this point, I'm considering this whole regime a wash instead of just this year. I don't just have any confidence in them at all. This game in Miami was kind of the cherry on top for all of that. Just going out there, laying an egg, and having CBS take you off the TV because it's not a competitive game. That's embarrassing. Everything about this year has been embarrassing. And I'm not sad to see it go.
No, only, I believe, three games left, over these next 3 weeks, the Washington Commanders, the Cleveland Browns, and the final game against the New England Patriots, possibly Bill Belichick's final game as the New England Patriot head coach against the New York Jets. Where do we go from here? How do you handle these next three games over opponents that are not world beaters? And I would say that most people on a neutral site would say the Jets have some amount of a chance of winning possibly two out of these three last games. But after what we've seen recently, I think it's really hard to have any faith in that at all. I think it's really hard to assume that this team is going to go out and perform to a winning level, because we haven't really seen that been able to be stacked up back to back in a very, very long time. And you had talked about this entire coaching staff being a wash. And I think that's, you hear that as a fan and your brain immediately goes to the head coach. And I think that Saleh has a lot of deserved criticism for this season. I think there's a lot that has happened that has been out of his control. I think there's a lot that has happened that has made things a lot more difficult that have been out of his control. But at the end of the day, your job as the head coach is to navigate through the storm and to adjust when things aren't working. And that's kind of Saleh more than anybody else. That's kind of his biggest issue, is an unwavering faithfulness to simplicity in his scheme, to the point of it being a fault, to the point of not making any potential adjustments necessary to influence a win. And the first place I want to go with that, Matt, as we talked about a little bit off air, there's been a lot of talk of this past game. Tyreek Hill misses the game in Miami. Jaylen Waddle goes for 142, I believe, and a touchdown, and goes off himself, even with Waddle out of the lineup. And everybody sees that he gets DJ Reed on a deep out and up, where DJ Reed's in off coverage. He's in zone, and he's expecting Waddle to run the little out, and he had run a couple of times earlier in the game, and it ended up being an out and up. And when you're a corner, even if you're someone as fast as DJ Reed or as explosive as DJ Reed, Jaylen Waddle's one of the fastest and most explosive players in the league, period. And if you aren't perfectly on top of the route and you're playing catch up, it's going to be hard to recover. Granted, Jeff Ulbrich had come out, I believe, yesterday and said that Reed was supposed to have safety help on that play, and Ulbrich didn't communicate well enough to the defense that that was the idea. Point being, a lot of people have been asking for Sauce Gardner, or why Sauce Gardner didn't travel on Jaylen Waddle to potentially eliminate the game that he had. And the first question I have to ask people is, why is it the second the Jets passing offense starts giving up yards, everybody thinks DJ Reed is significantly worse than Sauce Gardner?
Yeah.
Because every other time of the year, it's the Jets have three great corners. They have the best corner trio in the NFL, which very well might be true. You know, they have excellent, excellent corner play. And we love DJ Reed when he's not giving up long touchdowns against incredibly fast players. I really don't get the idea that if the issue on this play in particular that is causing people to ask for a change to the defense is DJ Reed giving up a long touchdown, I bet DJ Reed's faster than Sauce Gardner in a race.
I wouldn't be surprised. But yeah, go ahead.
No, if we're just talking straight line speed, I think DJ Reed probably has a step on Sauce. And that's because Sauce is significantly bigger and heavier. And it would be expected for that to be the case. The coaching staff has had a lot of things that they could have done to fix this game. That isn't one of them, in my opinion. A different idea would be to change the schematic of your defense and try and do something a little bit tricky, or try and go against tendencies in terms of coverages, in terms of alignments, not just being the same basic, we're going to be a single high cover three team, we'll play some cover four every now and again, and we'll play cover one on third downs. It's been that way for the Jets quite literally since Robert Saleh's first year, and all we've seen is newfound talent added and more experience in the scheme to make them better, but it's still a very simple defense. And when you're a team like the Miami Dolphins that has plenty of talent in their own right and knows how to exploit that defense and knows how to create plays to generate people getting open against that defense, it makes it really hard to defend. So it's kind of a two-handed point for me where there's adjustments that need to be made from the coaching staff. I just don't think that this is the one that would have made a drastic difference. And it's the one I've seen a lot of people asking for.
Yeah. I think people have, you know, unrealistic expectations for our defense. When this defense has delivered time and time again this year, has worked themselves into the top of the league in, you know, defensive rankings in multiple stats, it's not the problem. So, yeah, every now and then they're going to get beat. They're not perfect. Even Sauce gets beat. So it's not something that is that out of the ordinary and should be, you know, looked down on. Like, we shouldn't really get them for this. There's so many other things to complain about, and how the defense attacks a certain player or offense is not one of them, because I have the utmost confidence in this defensive unit to, more times than not, deliver.
No, me as well. And like the same vein, you have a 60-yard touchdown given up by DJ Reed to Jalen Waddle. That accounts for 60 of his 140 something yards. The other 80 of them came over the middle against zone coverages, where Jalen Waddle is running over routes or dig routes and two or through balls right in front of CJ Mosley and Quincy Williams. Very accurate, well-timed, good throws that hit Waddle in stride, and he's able to make plays after the catch and generate more yards that way. Sauce traveling on him would do nothing for those plays unless the Jets exclusively played man coverage, which, if you look at their coverage percentage splits, they pretty much only play man coverage on third down. And if it's not third down, they're in zone. So the idea of a simple fix of, oh, you could just have Sauce travel, and that's what has solved everything, and this coaching staff isn't adjusting. No, the coaching staff isn't adjusting, but that's not the adjustment that would have made that much of a difference. Moving on from that, wanted to get that out into the air, and now we can continue on to other things. We have to, once again, Matt, talk about this offensive line. And I know, it's rough, and we know it's rough, but we are at the point now, and I think we've been at this point for a while, where I don't think it's possible for the Jets to play offense. And that I don't think it matters who's under center. I almost don't think it matters who the play caller is. And it doesn't matter what running backs or receivers you have outside or in the backfield. This offensive line is so bad right now that it's not capable of being a functioning unit and allowing the team to play professional level offensive football. And it's a shame. It's an absolute shame. And I think there is no one that deserves more criticism for this than Joe Douglas. You were the offensive lineman. You were the one touted with, and I think I said this last week, Matt, if you remember, Joe Douglas infamously comes in when he's first hired and says, we're going to protect Sam Darnold, give him playmakers and protection. That's our number one goal. Obviously, that didn't last. And the whole goal since then has been getting protection up front. You have one hit on the offensive line, one real true hit to say this is a player that is a star, a good player, a starter, someone that we rely on, and that's ABT. And he's missed half the season 2 years in a row now. Outside of that, what home run hits have we had either in free agency or the draft that have been consistent in more than one season? You had a great job with Morgan Moses in the middle of the offseason a few years ago. He gets signed away to Baltimore for $15 million over 3 years, $5.5 million guaranteed. Apparently, that was too much for the Jets, but you'll pay Dalvin Cook $7 million and guarantee $5.8. Would anyone argue that Dalvin Cook, if you had to swap money, would you rather give $5.8 million guaranteed to Dalvin Cook or Morgan Moses this year?
Yeah, the answer to that is simple. In fact, it's pretty much a rhetorical question. So it pains me to see this offensive line kind of, you know, following the same path year in and year out. Get really injured and play horribly, not adjusting. And, you know, the result is what we've seen this year. And yeah, it's very disappointing to see this happen under the watch of JD, who we had a lot of confidence in to really dig in and fix this offensive line. When he picked Becton, everybody was like, okay, here's a sign. He's finally doing something to fix this offensive line, which I guess speaks to the incompetence beforehand to fix the offensive line. So yeah, we can say he had the right idea for attacking the position in terms of trying to attack the position, but that's a mighty low bar, a threshold to meet when it comes to satisfaction with something a GM should do. That's the bare minimum. Yes, fix the offensive line. That's a no-brainer. So congratulations. You brought people. Now the real challenge needs to be met. Bring people in that can play. Bring people in that can stay healthy. Bring people in that are leaders. Bring people in that have some youth. Bring people in that are consistent. Just do that. But no, that's not something he has done. And I know that's a lot easier said than done, but it's something that we had an expectation of, and he has let us down.
Yeah, 100%. 100% let this team down when it comes to building this offensive line. Mekhi Becton's awful. He's awful right now. He's horrible. His technique is completely and totally just destroyed. I don't know why. I can't fathom. I don't understand. Matt, you know I've sent clips of this in our group chat more times than I can remember at this point. He won't move his feet in pass protection. He won't keep up a steady pace. He doesn't have a consistent drop. He doesn't get to a good depth. He's not controlled and even and consistent with his footwork when he is in drop back pass protection. He gives two light, quick little mini steps and tries to two-hand punch whatever rusher is coming every time, every single time. And it's gotten to the point where every rusher he's facing knows that and knows the easiest way to beat him, which is swat the hands and dip. And it happens over and over and over and over again. There's never any accountability. There's never any adjustment. There's never any time after a sack on third down that we ever cut to the cameras and there's Keith Carter or Robert Saleh or anybody going to Mekhi Becton and getting on him and saying, for the love of Christ, move your feet in pass protection. Doesn't happen. Blake and Tomlinson has been a traffic cone since getting here. Not once does it ever feel like anyone is going to Blake and Tomlinson and saying, you are the highest paid member of this offensive line and you're playing like the worst. That's not okay. Fix it, work on it, improve. There's just zero accountability. There's zero attempt to shake things up. Why did this team sign Roger Saffold? Why? Either he was healthy enough to play and it's been long enough now because he signed a handful of weeks ago. Either it was healthy and he was healthy enough to play. It's been long enough for him to learn the offense. It's a similar offense to what he's ran in two different other stops in his career in Tennessee and with the Rams. Either he's healthy enough to play and deserves a shot because who else do you have that's been playing well enough to say he doesn't? Or he wasn't healthy enough to play, so why'd you sign him at all? In the same vein, why is Dwayne Brown not playing over Mekhi Becton right now? You've kept him on the roster. You kept him on the roster all summer. You kept him fighting to come back. You activated him. And now all he does is come in as a sixth offensive lineman on run plays that don't work. So again, is Dwayne Brown healthy enough to play or not? Because if he's healthy enough to play, he should be playing over Mekhi Becton right now. And if he's bad too, then he's bad too. But Mekhi should not be continually rewarded with getting to start for the level of play that he's been putting out. Same thing with Tomlinson. If Saffold can't beat him out, if Saffold can't do better, oh well, at least you tried. why are these guys wasting? Why are these guys collecting money to be on the practice squad and not be used when they actually could be needed?
Yeah, I mean, this speaks to the accountability issue that I feel like we've mentioned before. Yeah, there's not a lot of depth. Yeah, there's a lot of injuries. But at the same time, it's already hard. A hard performance out there. Why keep doing it? It's doing the same thing over and over again and expecting something different. They are, in fact, mad if they think that they're going to parade these guys out there week in and week out and expect something different. They just aren't good. So don't reward it, like you said. Just do something that shows that you actually care, because just letting them, you know, run ruckshaw over the offense with their poor performances is not doing it. And it's not showing anything to us where we can be like, you know what? Yeah, sure, he's a player's coach, but he holds people accountable. No, that's not what we can say. And I don't believe we could say that about anything outside of, actually, I can't think of a single instance where he's really disciplined anybody by benching them. Can you think of anything off the top of your head?
Yeah, Zach Wilson this year.
Oh, yes. Well, all right.
Like,
Zach Wilson. But.
Right. But that's what drives me so crazy. Is that how do you think the rest of the locker room is feeling? How do you think guys like Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall are feeling right now, going, damn, Zach was pretty much the only reason we were able to do anything. And the guys up front are so bad that they are hampering him and hampering this entire offense. And Zach Wilson's the one that gets blamed for it. And he gets benched. And then when another guy comes in who's worse and also is getting smoked by this offensive line, that's supposed to be just perfectly okay. And no one is ever going to be held accountable. No one's ever going to miss a game. No one's ever going to be pulled. No one's ever going to be benched. We're never going to get to that point. Because for whatever reason, apparently Mekhi Becton and Laken Tomlinson are untouchable. These are guys where you mentioned injuries and depth and rotation and all of that. And all of that is true. These are two guys that were starting before the year. These are the only two guys on this offensive line that were part of the starting unit from the beginning. And they've been two of the worst culprits. And they're not getting held to that same standard that anybody should be. And it's really like the only person that gets held to a standard is Zach Wilson, to the point where he'll go out there concussed and fight through a concussion to try and play a game, despite getting the crap kicked out of him because this offensive line can't block. And now he's in the protocol and likely to miss another game. And you have an offense that's going to be starting Trevor Siemian under center with an offensive line that can't do anything against a Commander's defensive front that's got guys like Daron Payne and Jonathan Allen on it. What are you doing? How is there not any amount of an attempt to take guys that you've signed, like a Roger Saffold, like a Dwayne Brown, that have been in your building, that have been working, and give them an opportunity? And if they aren't healthy enough to play, why did you sign them at all? It seems like a very, very simple concept here to me. And I just can't understand it. And not to spend too long ranting, but something we haven't mentioned on this show and I think has been forgotten amid the midst of everything else, Keith Carter has been a horrible hire. Horrible hire.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. Look at the results. How could you argue?
Well, yeah, when you think of, see, I am of the mindset that if you have a deficiency on your team, you should throw everything you can at the best option available. Could you say Carter is the best offensive line coach that we could have brought in?
No.
Highly doubt it. There are so many talented offensive line coaches out there. And not even just in the NFL, in the college ranks, that really, you know, churn out offensive line talent year in and year out consistently. But no, we look to Carter. Why? Why? And it just kind of shows like how buddy-buddy this league is. I'm not sure whose connection he has with on our team before he joined, but it's all about who you know. Maybe it was even somebody, a friend of Sala recommending him. And that makes me think of Gates and Peyton Manning recommending him. So it's not really, it speaks to the ability to evaluate. They can't evaluate talent on offense. They can't evaluate talent in coaching. So that's where I see the biggest deficiency, is being able to evaluate this talent. And they have not shown that they can. And that starts up top. So this is something that needs to be fixed, and probably won't until there's a complete whitewash of this management and coaching staff.
No, I don't disagree. I don't disagree at all. You had mentioned you're not quite sure where the familiarity with Carter was. Well, I have an answer for you. He knew Robert Saleh in Seattle between 2012 and 2013.
There it is.
There it is. So somebody Saleh knows from his Seattle days. Boom, that's all it takes. He had a year of overlap with Hackett in Jacksonville under Gus Bradley, which is Seattle tree. Boom, that's what it takes. Jeff Ulbrich, good hire. Don't think that we can say anything against that. We've been singing his praises for a while now, and I'm not trying to change my tune. But he also falls in that same category of somebody he knew from Seattle who was learned under Dan Quinn and was their linebacker coach and eventual interim defensive coordinator. Knows the scheme, familiar with the type of environment that they want to breed. And at what point do you see that those results aren't working? So why are you trying to do it again? Pete Carroll himself has changed. The Pete Carroll Seahawks don't run Carroll cover three anymore. The Pete Carroll Seahawks don't run the same offense that they were running in 2013 with Russell Wilson. They've adapted. They've changed. They've expanded their horizons and not just been stuck in their ways. But this team can't get out of its own way. And there's a lot of factors in play here, but the number one biggest one for me is the stubbornness and the unwavering commitment to a scheme that only works when you play with a lead on an offense that can't score points. It's mind-numbing to me. It's absolutely mind-numbing, and it really, really makes me question the future.
It really does. And there's no simple answer. It's just something we have to live with.
Unfortunately, that is the case. Looking forward, game against the Washington Commanders coming Christmas Eve, a very happy Christmas present for the New York Jets and their fans getting to watch this team try and score points one more time. This is going to be a very interesting matchup. The Commanders defense currently ranked 32nd in the NFL. The Jets offense currently ranked 32nd in the NFL. You have an immoving object against a very stoppable force in this game. Who's going to come out on top? Well, I already alluded to it earlier. I don't trust guys like Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne against what the Jets have on the offensive front right now. And I think 32nd ranked defense is going to look like a top two defense against this offense because they are. This might be the worst professional offensive line I've ever seen. And I'm struggling, seriously, seriously struggling to think of a unit that was equally as horrendous pass blocking as they are run blocking, to the point where you are incapable of doing anything on offense. There was a couple of times in this Miami game when players were open. There was a deep dig route that Garrett Wilson ran on Jalen Ramsey, who that's wide open. That's going to be a 30-yard play plus whatever Garrett gets with running the ball. and it's a play action pass. And by the time Zach Wilson has his is completely turned around, and he doesn't have his back to the defense anymore, there's three Dolphins running at him. You can't play professional football with an offensive line this bad. And I don't care if your opponent is the number one seed Miami Dolphins or the 32nd ranked defense in the Washington Commanders. I have zero faith in this line's ability to do anything positive.
I agree. They haven't shown that they have any competence at all. So why think that it's going to change now? I know it's easy to just look at this Washington defense and say, well, they're pretty much turnstiles out there. They just let everybody into the end zone. So it's easy to get trapped in that, but we're so bad on offense. I don't know. This is a battle of who could be worse. And in the end, I think it's us. And maybe, I guess this is like reverse homerism, I guess. I don't know what to describe this as. We're kind of, you know, battling it out to see who's worse. And I think they would say that they're worse on defense than we are on offense. And I guess that's where we're at right now. It's just a matter of, you know, draft position. That means more to people than winning this game. So I guess in all honesty, does it even all matter? This game is about as pointless and as it gets, other than the fact that if we lose, we have a chance to move ourselves into the fourth position in the draft, which would be great. That'd be awesome. That's the only thing I could take from this game.
Yeah, I am fully in the camp that the best thing possible for this team, once again, is completely and totally bottom out and get destroyed over these last three games. Make the Commanders' defense look like the 85 Bears. Give no reason to, at the end of this year, turn around and say, we have confidence that this same collection of coaching staff and talent is going to work. Because if you have that random, like I said, you win two out of these next three games and you're picking seventh or eighth in the draft, you're going to hear the, well, we ended strong. We fought hard to end the year. We had a couple of wins at the end of the season. If we could have just gotten that earlier in the year, it would have been in a different spot. We didn't have Rodgers, the injuries, blah, blah, blah. You're going to hear all the excuses in the world. And if this team is just outright embarrassing for the last 3 weeks, it's going to be a lot harder to make those excuses. And they're going to be more likely able to take one of the two top offensive tackles at the very top of this class, either of which, either Joe Alt at Notre Dame or Olufoshana at Penn State, either of which would be massive and much well-needed additions to this offense. I can't even believe, as a Jets fan for as long as I've been, it pains me to say this, I hope Bill Belichick beats the Jets in his last game.
Yeah, that's a sad reality that we live in right now. We're hoping that the Darth Vader of the league, you know, goes out on a high note. That's a sad state of affairs. Jeez. But you know what? At least we made it to December.
This is true.
That's the silver lining. You know what? The season wasn't over in November. All right, we had games that we got a little excited about. Maybe we still thought they were going to suck and lose, but we had a little bit of hope. We had a little bit of excitement. So you know what? With three games left, we made it far this season. That's the what we can hang our hat on right now.
That's about all we can hope to hang our hat on. That and the defense, because even with their performance against the Dolphins, I think the Jets defense still did a lot of good. I still think that they had their moments. I don't think that they were completely and totally overwhelmed and dominated. I think they were on the field too much because the Jets offense can't score. And they were already playing, they're playing from behind. They're playing catch up. Your Dolphins get the ball at the 1 yard line off a fumble on the first drive of the game and are able to go up a touchdown. That's immediately, as a defense, your entire landscape changes and you have to play a bit differently. This Commanders offense has some talented players. It's not as if that they have nobody whatsoever and they're just completely and totally lost. Sam Howell's been playing some solid football, not amazing, but not completely and totally incompetent. Seventh in the NFL in passing yards right now. You have two really good receivers in Terry McLaurin and Jahan Dotson on the outside that are a tough cover for anybody, let alone the Jets corner trio. Those are some good players. You got a good running back in Brian Robinson in the backfield. You have an offensive line with a handful of pieces. Nothing amazingly earth-shattering, but definitely better than the Jets group. You have talent on this offense to stop. And that is where what I think is going to be the ultimate difference in the game is that the Jets defense is going to allow a little bit to the Commanders offense and the Commanders defense is going to allow nothing to the Jets offense. And that's all it's going to take for this game to... Honestly, I think this game could get out of hand. The Commanders are a 4-win team, and not to get too far out ahead of ourselves and get to picks to end the show, but I think they win by 2 scores.
With this game and the quality that they have put out there, even though they have a couple good interior defensive linemen, I can't see them having the same kind of success as the Dolphins or another team, just because they traded away all their pass rushers on the outside. And I think that's where we're our weakest, really. So I have a little bit more confidence in maybe Tippmann doing his job than I do with Becton or whoever our right tackle is. So I think we'll be able to do a little bit. Whether it's a lot, no, I don't think so. I think it will be just enough to say, hey, look, we can move the ball. And then we get a field goal. And then that's probably it. And then we call it a day and we're like, yeah, we had that one drive. Remember that one drive? Yeah, that was great.
That was a fun one.
That was a fun one. But yeah, in the end, I also see us losing this game. Possibly by quite a bit if the defense kind of mails it in. Although I don't think they will. They have too much pride. They have too much talent. They're going to put a good effort out there. So it has potential to get out of hand, like the Dolphin game. But I think it maybe stays a little closer, but a garbage game nonetheless.
Matt, I have a question for you. Yes. As I mentioned earlier, the Commanders defense overall currently ranked dead last, 32nd in the NFL, just like the Jets offense overall ranked dead last, 32nd in the NFL offensively. Do you know where the Commanders are worse on defense between rushing and passing?
I would say passing.
They are definitely worse in terms of passing defense. They are the 32nd ranked passing defense overall in terms of yards per game. They have allowed 264.8 yards per game, ranking dead last. They've allowed 7.7 yards per pass, ranking dead last at 32nd as well. Their interception percentage is 30th. However, their sack percentage is 16th. So it's not as if they are getting zero pressure whatsoever. It's not as if that, like you said, they traded away all of their edge rushers, and that is a good point. But as I'm going to mention a third time now, they have two really good interior players and Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne too. And in terms of their rush defense, they're actually not that horrible. They're 21st in yards per game, 119.7. In terms of yards per rush, they're 24th at 4.5. They are not necessarily great, but they're not dead last in the league. And so this, to me, looks like a game where the Jets might try their usual, we have to establish the run. We're going to throw Breece Hall at loaded boxes and hope and pray that he can make seven people miss as soon as he touches the ball and create some yards. And when that doesn't work, they're going to be forced into third and long and they're going to be forced to throw. And if you are the Commanders and if you are struggling to cover the pass, and that's been your big issue defensively, wouldn't you rather play this Jets team that's in third and long and can't pass protect?
Oh, absolutely.
That sounds like a recipe for success to me. That seems like it could be an issue for the New York Jets. And most importantly, and I don't think we've given enough attention to this point, Trevor Siemian starting for the Jets at quarterback. We're playing another backup quarterback. So the one thing the Commanders do well is the one thing the Jets are going to try and fail to do. And the area that they struggle is going to be helped out by the fact that the Jets are going to be in third and long situations, that the Commanders can still find ways to get some pressure on the quarterback, and it's going to be Trevor freaking Siemian throwing the ball. I'll skip right to it. I think this is a 14-0 Commanders win.
All right. Yeah, I would go with 6-3. I think it's just going to be ugly all around. People are going to, you know, get sick. They're going to call out of work on Monday because, you know, they're just depressed. And that's
well, they're going to wake up on Christmas morning on Monday depressed.
And that's true. Yeah, that's
and God bless anyone that has to go into work that day. But no, it's going to be.
I forgot what the weekend was. But yes, it's
bah humbug all around in Gotham City.
Yeah. Ugh. I have a question for you. It's absolutely nothing to do with this game, and more to do with what's realistic. Is it realistic for our offensive coaching staff and our offense players to really scrap what they knew to be true, what they practiced in the offseason as their offensive scheme, and adopt a completely different offense that molds more to what they can do? When I look at the Dolphins team, they have a lot of things to limit the deficiencies that they have. They've had offensive line issues all year, but you know what? They get the ball out so quick. They use so much motion and misdirection that it doesn't really matter because they are able to overcome it. Now, if we were able to switch things to that, is that realistic?
I think it very much depends on what exactly you mean. And I know what you mean, but I'm going to explain it a little more in depth for people that might not fully understand what you're saying. Is it realistic for this team to throw their playbook in the garbage and start completely from scratch and say, okay, we are starting over, this isn't working, we're coming up with a new scheme, and we're going to try and replicate Miami or Detroit or something along those lines? Absolutely not. No, it is not realistic. There's simply not enough time to entirely replace an offense and do things completely and totally different to what you've been practicing for months on end throughout the summer, throughout the rest of the season beforehand. It's just not realistic at all. Even when teams fire their offensive play callers mid-year, whoever is coming in to replace the recently fired play caller is not reinventing the wheel entirely, is not throwing away everything that was in the playbook whatsoever. What the Jets can do, should have done, and would have been realistic, is to add wrinkles to what was already there. So if you are the Jets, and you are wanting to run a play action concept from a two tight end set, and you want to have Garrett Wilson and Xavier Gibson being your two receivers, and you want them in a tight split to the line of scrimmage and your two tight ends on the other side. Okay, that's fine. Nothing wrong with that. No, not a horrible idea whatsoever. What you can do in that situation, like you're saying, Matt, start Garrett on the other side of the field on the tight end side, split out wide, and motion him to that stack alignment on the other side. You can add that wrinkle into a play and keep the rest of the play the same. You don't have to make a new play. You don't have to completely and totally come up with something brand new. You can add that wrinkle in. You can add a handful of new plays onto your already existing plays. We don't ever see the Jets really ever in the run game pull any offensive linemen or try and down block and come around or run any counter plays or anything of the sort. it's you saw it one time from my memory. I've seen it one time, and it was Breece Hall's long touchdown in Denver. Outside of that, it's split zone or inside zone or outside zone almost exclusively. And you could add wrinkles like a counter run, like a regular just straight up power, and have someone like Mekhi Becton down block something that he's very good at. One of the few things that he is very good at right now in down blocking and getting on top of people when crunching the inside. You could have some more runs like that. You could add different shifts into plays that are already existing, like I mentioned earlier with the motion. You can use different personnel alignments. You can call the same plays, but have different people running them. At this point, put Izzy in the backfield, or if you're not going to do that, sure, put Dalvin Cook. Put Breece Hall at receiver. Let him run some routes. Let him split out wide. You want to get as much speed on the field as possible. Give him some opportunities outside, because the few opportunities that he's had split out when the Jets go empty, he's cooking people. He's just not getting the ball because they can't block. You have ways to improve what's there. You have ways to learn from what's around the league and take things that worked other places and factor them in. You can't reinvent everything overnight. That's not realistic, but it doesn't mean that you can't do it in intervals.
Yep. And that's just something we haven't seen at all. And whether it's being unable to do that or not willing, either way, it's an indictment on this coaching staff. And I don't know, it's almost like they are saving it. I get this idea that they're just like, all right, well, Rodgers is down. Let's make this year pretty much a preseason game, where we'll be as vanilla as possible and not show them what we really want to do with Rodgers and how flexible we can be with Rodgers and the talent around him. that is ridiculous to really say, but it's plausible with like how stagnant and stuck in the mud they are with their ability to adapt. And I guess I would prefer that than, well, maybe no, actually no, I don't prefer that. Either way, it's incompetence, and it's something that is going to plague us until they're gone.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. It absolutely is. Matt, I want to toss something to an idea you had earlier in the show. Go ahead and drop the name for everybody here, because I don't want to take your thunder, but we need to talk about this roster and start making some tough decisions on who's going to be back and who maybe shouldn't be.
Okay. All right. Well, let's stay on topic with the offensive line. We have Lincoln Tomlinson, who is under contract next year, but there is an out where we can recoup some cap. If we do cut him, and even more so if we cut him post June 1st, yeah, that's kicking the can down the road. But you know what? I'm okay with kicking the can down the road. Does Lincoln Tomlinson make this team next year?
If I was running the show, absolutely not. It would be the first move I would make, or one of them. And I don't even care about waiting until June 1st. I don't care for the few extra million that they're going to save, and I know cap space is tight for the Jets, and maybe that's why I'm not an NFL GM, but he's gone the second the league year turns over, in my opinion. As soon as the new league year begins in March, cut him. Gone. It's been a horrible signing. It's been a massive failure of a signing. Lincoln Tomlinson is making top of the league guard money and is playing like arguably one of, if not the worst starting guards in the NFL, and has for 2 years now. And you never hear the guy say at any point in any time in 2 years, I need to be better. I'm letting the team down. I have to improve. I need to set the standard. I'm the one making all this money. I'm the veteran they signed. I've seen success. I need to improve and I need to be the leader. Not once have you heard that out of him ever at all. You've had every opportunity in the world. Matt, I will remember this for the rest of my life. There was a clip from Hard Knocks with Tomlinson and Quinnen Williams talking, saying, we really got to be the leaders of our respective units. This was after Quinnen got paid. You know, we're the ones making the money. I'll be the one leading the defensive line. You be the one leading the offensive line, setting the standard. You know, we need to be the guys that are the example for the rest of everybody else in our respective units and the ones being held accountable and holding each other accountable to meet the standard that we are trying to meet. Quinnen Williams has done that. Lakin Tomlinson has not. I don't, you could find somebody quote unquote worse because and start them and pay them less, significantly less money than what you've been paying Lakin for 2 years. And I still think at the end of the day, you might even have an upgrade. At the very worst, you're going to break even and you're going to save some cash along the way. Gone. Not even a thought for me.
So that's what you think should happen. Do you think it will happen, though?
Not at all.
See, yeah, that's, I kind of have the same feeling. When you look at the offensive line and the injuries that have plagued them, you can then look at Lakin and be like, oh, but he's been healthy this entire time. He's the only one that's kind of been healthy this entire time. And I feel like JD wants to hang his hat on something with this offensive line. And I think that's going to be it. That, oh, we finally have somebody that's reliable. And I mean reliable only in health-wise. Mm-hmm. And I think that's in addition to the fact that we'll probably have two other starting positions that we need to fill. And being able to fill two is going to be hard enough. Having to fill three offensive line positions, that sounds even like something that JD doesn't want to have to do. And then if you factor in the fact that AVT hasn't had a healthy season yet, and that he's coming back off of an Achilles injury, that he's no lock in the being what he used to be. So there's a lot of uncertainty. And when it comes to uncertainty, I think he's going to latch onto the one thing that he can rely on, and that's him staying healthy.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I can hear the Lakin's made 32 consecutive starts for us since he came here argument already. Like, that's absolutely going to be the sell. They're going to say he's been around, he's consistent, he's a veteran, you know, he's one of our leaders, even if he really isn't. That's what we're going to hear. And I would be surprised if Lakin Tomlinson is not on this team next year. He shouldn't be. There's absolutely zero reason that we've seen that has given him any amount of right to earn the right to be here. But I think that's going to be the case. Matt, I got one more for you before we wrap this up. I want to jump to the defensive side of the ball and specifically the defensive line. John Franklin Myers, which I think is a very interesting argument in terms of cuts for a pre-June 1st cut in 2024. There would be $9 million in dead money, but an overall cap saving of 7.3 since he is set to have a $16.3 million cap hit in 2024. If it's a post-June 1st cut, that goes to $2 million in dead money and almost $14 million in total in cap savings, 13.9.
Well, all right. I think this move is reliant on another move, on what happens with Huff. Because if we lose Huff to free agency, then losing Franklin Myers as well would kind of leave our defensive line, especially on the edge, kind of in a lurch. Yeah, we'll still have JJ. Yeah, we'll still have the weapon of mass destruction, who we just drafted, coming up in the league. Maybe he makes a year or two leap, but I wouldn't count on that. And that's not a defensive line that I think Stala would be happy with. So I see the positives in doing it, but I don't think it happens, and I don't think I would want it to happen either. But again, tentatively, depending on what happens with Huff.
Yeah, I think that's the big factor, and I don't totally disagree. here's my point. I don't think they can sign Huff unless they cut JFM.
Okay.
I think they missed their shot to sign Bryce Huff, quite honestly. And that they should have done this in October and wrapped him up before he even got close to getting to the market, before having to consider any amount of a franchise tag or anything like that. I think this should have been done a long time ago, to where it's not now hanging in the air over what's going to happen. Because the second Bryce Huff starts getting offers from other teams, it's going to be more than what the Jets can pay. Unless they make some moves like this one. And they're going to save a lot more with a post-June 1st as opposed to a pre-June 1st. But by June 1st, Bryce Huff's going to be on another team if the Jets don't do something. I think you have to choose. I think you have to choose, do you want JFM or do you want Bryce Huff? And for me, I want Bryce Huff. I think that that's an easy decision for me. He's younger. He's more explosive as a pass rusher. His run defense has improved. He has the undrafted pedigree, which JFM was a late round pick. Not like he doesn't have that motivation either, but you have that different level of motivation as an undrafted free agent. And you have somebody in Jermaine Johnson, who we both loved a lot before the draft, has ascended very well in his second season. That is a very good run defender that I think could fill that JFM role on early downs and still make some impact as a pass rusher at the end of the day on third down. I don't know if you can. We're hopeful when Will McDonald is ascending, but are, like you said, are we that confident in his talent in the very limited amount of time he has had to play as a rookie? Way less than Jermaine got to play, for what it's worth. For people thinking that it's going to be a similar year two leap, Jermaine, I would have to go back and check the numbers, but I would put every dollar in my bank account down on a bet that Jermaine outsnapped McDonald as a rookie by a good little bit. And that experience matters. I don't know if I can sit here and say McDonald is going to come in and be able to replace the production of 8 sacks from Bryce Huff right off the bat in year two when he's barely had any chance to play as a rookie. I think you have to let JFM go if you want to keep Bryce Huff. And if you don't let JFM go, then you are admitting you are comfortable losing Bryce Huff.
Well, how about this? A third option, restructure him. Just looking,
they already did this past May.
I think they could probably do it again. Let's see. I put in the restructure option on over the cap, and it says that we can save $9 million if we restructure them.
Is that any void years?
Maybe.
Because he's already got some added.
Can they add more? He's got two void years that right
they
now.
They can. They're going to be like negative $200 million in the hole come 2027. But yeah, I guess.
You know what? They don't care about 2027. They barely care about this year. So,
good point, I guess. Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. This is a really interesting conversation. And I'm just trying to prepare everybody now for the reality that Bryce Huff might very well be on a different team next year, even if he shouldn't be, because the Jets should have re-signed this guy last year, let alone this past early part of this year and the first couple of months of the season. They've had more than enough opportunity to get something done. And here we are, 3 games left to go towards the end of the year. And doesn't seem like we're any closer to an extension being finalized than we were this time last year. And Bryce Huff isn't going to wait to get paid for that much longer. He will go where the money is going to take him. And honestly, I can't blame him. So I'm really curious to see what happens with this defensive line, because I actually think there's a sneaky area for a lot of change in the offseason. You know, it's likely Carl Lawson's not going to be back. He's been a healthy scratch for the last handful of weeks. We talked about JFM. There's questions surrounding Bryce Huff. Quentin Jefferson only signed a 1-year deal. He's on IR. Guys like Al Woods signed 1-year deals. He's also on IR. There's going to be a lot of new faces in this defensive line, and I'm not sure many people were talking about it.
Yeah, there's going to be some changes, and some of them we're just going to have to deal with. But you know what? I think change on the defense will be tolerated. It's the change on the offense that we really want and we really need to see.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Matt, I got nothing else to add. How about you?
Not nada.
All right. Well, thank you everybody for tuning in. Recap over picks. I'm saying 14-0 Commanders. Matt, you're saying 6-3 Commanders. A very not very Merry Christmas for anybody involved. But for those listening, enjoy the holiday. Merry Christmas to everybody. Have some good time with your families. Don't think about Jets football for a little bit and just be in the moment and be present with positive things in your life as opposed to the giant dark green death spear in the sky that hovers over us most of the rest of our lives. Thank you so much for listening. Matt, let the people know where they can find you and we can get on out of here.
Matt, you can find me at ZazzyJets.
And you can find me at AndrewGolden_17. You can also follow the show at OKD Podcast. Thank you all one more time for tuning in. And we will be back next week to review, hopefully, at this point, hopefully a Jets loss to the Commanders. I wish I could sit there and say hopefully a win, but we are in full tankathon draft position mode with 3 weeks left to go in the season and the Jets out of playoff contention. So we'll see what happens. In a weird time, sometimes this is the best time to be a Jets fan because you don't even care. And if they suck, you're happy about it. And if they win, then cool. You can be happy with a win too. Thank you guys for being here. We will be back real soon. Bye-bye.